If you run a business large or small, get ready to take a lot of notes, because it's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
Thank you, and you're tuned to another edition of the Mind Your Business Show with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide on WABCBizRadio.com. This show is the Mind Your Business Show. It's all about business ideas, real people, real businesses, real success stories on Real Radio 77 WABC. As the listeners of this wonderful show know by now, it's all about sharing incredible ideas and marketing strategies in order to get you successful and ahead in today's business world. Each week, we have high-profile guests or guests, and we ask them the questions that are on your mind. Last week, we had Matt Britton, the CEO of MRY and the author of a book, Youth Nation. He gave incredible perspective about how to market to millennials. We got great feedback for that, and we appreciate all the guests that we have. Tonight's guest is really, really special, something we've been working on for a while. You won't believe it. It's Captain Chesley Burnett Sully Sullenberger, the pilot who successfully executed the emergency water landing of U.S. Airways Flight 1549 in the Hudson in New York City back on January 15th, 2009. After both engines were taken out when a flock of Canadian geese flew right into the flight path of the A320 Airbus during its initial climb out of LaGuardia. As we all know, the story has a very happy ending. All 155 passengers and crew survived. Permit me to list some bio about Captain Sullenberger. He served as a fighter pilot in the U.S. Air Force, advancing through the ranks from flight leader to the rank of captain. Captain Sullenberger is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Highest Duty, My Search for What Really Matters, a memoir and a look back at the miracle on the Hudson, the complete story of the miraculous incident of U.S. Airways Flight 1549, published by HarperCollins. In 2009, he was ranked second in Time Magazine's top 100 most influential heroes and icons. And he was given the key to the city by then New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And of course, he's known as a true American hero. With that intro, we give a warm welcome to Captain Sully Sullenberger. Hello, Captain.
Hi, great to be with you.
Wow, thank you so much for being with us here on the Mind Your Business program on 77 WABC. Well, first let me address the question that's on everyone's mind. It's really nice that you're here with us today. You're a true American hero. I mean, single-handedly saving the lives of 155 people, a very modest individual. But the connection for a business show, it's a little bit a question that's on people's minds. There are a lot of people that prepare for this program, and they had asked that question when I said, I want to interview Captain Sullenberger. And they said, it's like, wow, that would be unreal. But what's the connection to business? And the answer is very simple. Let's face it, anyone in business, and especially an executive, faces tough challenges on a daily basis. Some issues are really serious, although fortunately, almost never are they life and death issues. Nevertheless, we all face real deadlines and pressures in the workplace. And therefore, the people behind the scenes in the Mind Your Business program set out to interview Captain Sullenberger, for if there was ever an individual who understood how to maintain presence of mind under the most paralyzing conditions, it's you, Captain Sullenberger. And we are so grateful that you took the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful intro. I'm going to take issue with one thing you said, though.
Okay.
You said single-handedly. And I've been trying for 6 years now to remind everyone that while I was the leader of a team, it was absolutely due to the efforts of many people in the airplane and the first responders in the ferry company that rescued us that led to the successful outcome in which no one perished. And all 155 passengers and crew survived this unexpected challenge of a lifetime. But you're right. There absolutely are many parallels and many connections, not just to business. But as I have become a speaker and a consultant and had many opportunities in the last 6 years that I would not have had as an airline pilot for the 40 years before that, I see, as I talk to audiences around the world, and as diverse as nuclear power operations to financial risk managers, to high tech, to education, to medical professionals and everything in between, how many similarities there are. And when we think about it, that really shouldn't be too surprising, because ultimately what we're talking about in almost every industry, in almost every domain, in any organization, is how do we lead people, how do we create a culture of excellence? How do we take vision and share it with others so that we can coordinate group efforts toward a common goal? And that's something that we've done in aviation. We faced an ultimate challenge, never having specifically trained for it, but because we had taught captains how to lead and build a team, because we had teams well-schooled in the consistent application of best practices, because we had such a well-understood way of communicating with each other, we didn't have to completely reinvent the wheel to solve even this ultimate challenge. We simply had to put the last several spokes in place. And so we all had roles to play, and I think that's really one of the key elements that sometimes is overlooked in this episode.
And it's a great point that you mentioned, and of course I will get to it in the interview, because your modesty is so noted. And I understand there were many people in the control tower, and of course First Officer Jeffrey Skiles. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did.
Okay, so and I'll get to that, because you'll see, we did our homework for this show. For the benefit of our listeners, we're going to do a short trip in memory lane to go back to January 15th, nearly 6 years ago. It's a frigid 20-degree day. It's 3:25 in the afternoon. U.S. Airways Flight 1549 gets clearance and takes off from LaGuardia with Captain Sully Sullenberger and First Officer Jeffrey Skiles in the cockpit. Less than 90 seconds into the flight, both engines are out, completely out, after a flock of Canadian geese head right through the flight path of 1549. At this point, and as both engines suddenly are out, there is a frightening, eerie silence that prevails aboard the aircraft. The following precious few seconds are spent on determining, number one, I have the lives of 155 people in my hands. Can we properly align ourselves with the runway back at LaGuardia? Two, are we high enough to glide all the way to Teterboro? Number three, can we? Any chance we can make it to Newark? Well, in a New York minute, which we all know is roughly a tenth of a second, Captain Sullenberger makes the gutsy decision to glide the Airbus into the Hudson. And as we all know today, that decision single-handedly, and as the captain pointed out, okay, with the help of others, saved the lives of all 155 people aboard, as within minutes, a few harrowing minutes, all passengers were rescued from the wings, etc., but from the waters by ferries and boats that rushed to the scene. Well, Captain, is there a secret, a suggestion that you could share with us to that would enable someone to mentally prepare themselves for any type of issue or danger that may confront them?
It really is about preparation. It's about having a commitment, a personal commitment to lifelong learning and a striving for excellence. It's having an understanding that just good enough isn't. And so, you know, that's what I was talking about when I talk to audiences around the world and I see how many simulators there are. It's because we're all trying to figure out how do we improve human performance in complicated systems that all involve some kind of inherent risk. So you're right. It really starts with the leadership. It really starts with how each of us lives our lives and tries to be really the most complete human being that we can be. One of my great mentors from afar is the late Warren Bennis, a longtime professor at University of Southern California. He wrote some 30 books on leadership. And he said there's really no difference between being an effective leader and being a completely integrated human being, and I agree with that. So I think it starts with each of us having the discipline, the diligence to continue to learn, and to control our egos. You know, ego can be a powerful force, a motivating force, a force for good, potentially. But left unchecked, you know, it can wall us off. It can separate us from those who would be helping us in an effective team setting. It closes us off to their communication, their collaboration, their innovation. We're stuck with our own ideas, and that just often isn't enough. We need to work effectively as a team. We can accomplish much more as an effective team than we can as a collection of individuals. And so when at a large airline, as we did that week, you fly with people you've sometimes never met before, and that's true for me and my first officer, Jeff Skiles. We met for the first time just 3 days before this ultimate challenge of a lifetime. Yet had you been allowed to sit in the observer seat in our cockpit and watch us work on that flight to the Hudson, not that you would really have wanted to be there with us, I grant you. You would have thought we'd been working together for years because we knew our roles and responsibilities so well. So because we had trained as a team, and we had become essentially interchangeable by being trained at such a high professional standard. So at the beginning of that trip, when I met the flight attendants that I hadn't flown with before, some of them, we aligned goals. We talked about a few specifics. We helped to create this shared sense of responsibility for the outcome very quickly, in a couple of minutes, in a quick briefing before we boarded the first bunch of passengers on a series of flights for that week. That's part of this human skill set that often isn't taught in business schools. That's critically important. In fact, we're beginning to see in peer-reviewed articles in major journals in medicine and in industry that these kind of human skills and leadership abilities have the potential to affect the needle, move the needle more than other skills, not just financial skills.
Right. That brings to mind the books by Travis Bradbury. Yeah, he's one of the really great authors that I think, what's emotional intelligence? I think emotional intelligence, yeah.
That's certainly a part of it. And it's these human skills that some deride as soft skills. And I bristle at that description. They're not soft as opposed to hard skills, but they are human skills as opposed to technical skills or financial skills, for example. Mm-hmm. It takes both to do it well. And I think some people don't realize how important they are because we haven't done a full accounting for the hidden yet real costs when we don't have them in our organizations. And when we account for the cost of not having effective leadership and team building and collaboration and a shared sense of responsibility, we'll see that these techniques absolutely pay for themselves in the long run.
This actually leads me into the next question. In a famous interview you had with news anchor Katie Couric, you noted, "One way of looking at this might be that for 42 years, I've been making small regular deposits in this bank of experience, education, and training. And on January 15th, the balance was sufficient so that I could make a very large withdrawal." Reflecting on those words, and especially in today's trends of social media and the like, which push us faster and faster and to some degree make us admire the young as opposed to the experienced and the accomplished, how important is that road paved with life experience?
I think it's critical. We didn't have time in the, as it turned out, 208 seconds we had from the thrust loss until our flight path had intersected the surface of the Earth. And I had to choose where that was going to happen in a way that would lead to the best outcome. And so we didn't have time to learn everything we needed to know. We had to have a really well-determined paradigm in our minds already of how to solve any problem that might suddenly confront ourselves and then adapt that series of plans to meet the circumstances of this unique situation. And so having a mental paradigm of priorities I could draw from and then adapting what we did know and adjusting it to fit the circumstances was really key. There simply is no substitute for having that kind of preparation, that kind of training, that kind of dedication, that kind of a system already in place that allows us to operate and to innovate in such a stressful, time-critical situation.
Now, in preparation for this interview, I actually listened to the air traffic recordings of those 3 minutes, roughly. A discerning person can easily pick up the tension of the moment, how so quickly you assessed the situation and then made a firm decision and stuck with it. Learning from that moment, how important is it in business and, frankly, in everyday life when one has to make a firm decision to stick with it and to be comfortable with it?
Well, it has to be a decision based upon real core values. It has to be a decision based upon having real capabilities and not wishful thinking. It really needs to be grounded in reality. And so, again, it's that preparation that is so key. If I had not been able to so quickly narrow it down to essentially three options and then choose quickly among them, if I had had less experience flying into the New York metropolitan area and not known already what options were near me, then we would have run out of time before we could have eliminated the ones that wouldn't work. Mm. So being able to have values which provide guardrails from excesses and from egregious mistakes, and then having the specific experience and knowledge to choose among fewer options really helped to keep us from making huge errors in what could have been a catastrophe if we had not handled it better.
In my research, I noted how frequently you share the credit, and at the beginning of the show is no different, with your co-pilot that afternoon, First Officer Jeffrey Skiles. It's the tendency of most people to take all the credit for an accomplishment. How important is it, as of course you've demonstrated so eloquently, for a person to be a team player and share accolades?
Well, the outcomes are better. I could not have done it all by myself. In fact, you know, there have been a lot of talk recently about whether or not there's a pilot shortage and what the level of pilot qualification and experience should be to become an airline pilot. And this is yet another specific, concrete example of how experience, skill, and knowledge are critical, essential elements to this profession. Had I had a first officer who didn't have 20,000 hours of flying time like I do, who had not been a captain at this airline on a different type of airplane before the recent cutbacks and layoffs had forced him into the right seat of this airplane to be my first officer that day, had I had someone less experienced, I didn't have time to direct Jeff's every action. I didn't have time to have a real conversation with him about what had just happened and what we must do. I had to rely on Jeff understanding this situation as it developed immediately and intuitively as I did. I had to rely upon him to know from his own experience, training, and knowledge what he must do to assist me because I didn't have time to tell him. I couldn't have done it by myself, and I couldn't have done it with someone less able because I didn't have time to direct them. We were able to do something that people outside the industry often find hard to believe. We were able to collaborate wordlessly. We knew what needed to be done, and we began to set about doing it, except for a call for the checklist and take control of the airplane and a few other things. That was all I ever said to him. The rest of it just happened as a carefully choreographed silent ballet. And so when we finally listened to the cockpit voice recorder ourselves 4 months after the flight at the NTSB headquarters, when we finally had a chance to actually hear a recording of what happened in the cockpit that day and not just rely on our memories up to that point, it was breathtaking. Time didn't slow down for us, but it happened even faster than we remembered. But at the end, with almost tears in our eyes because we were so moved by the experience of hearing it again and reliving that moment, I was very proud of what we were able to accomplish together. We didn't sound overwhelmed. We sounded busy.
Wow. And that's why I mentioned a discerning ear picked that up. I mean, even it sounded like when you said we may end up in the Hudson, that in the control tower, it sounded like they almost didn't get that at first.
You know, I talked to Patrick Harden, our wonderful air traffic controller, about this later. And he's a second-generation controller. His father worked in the same facility before him.
Okay.
A very dedicated guy, like I'm talking about, one who eats and sleeps and breathes his profession and can't be good enough at it to suit himself. And you can hear in his voice how desperately he's trying to fulfill his professional responsibility, which is to try to get us back to a runway, any runway, and how devastated he is when he realizes that that's not an option. We can't glide that far. And he assumes that by choosing the river that I've signed our death warrant and that none of us would survive. You can hear how hard he is trying to help us in every way he possibly can.
Mm. Now, following the relatively smooth landing in the Hudson, it was noted how you walked through the cabin twice, even as the fuselage was taking on water through the back door, to make sure that everyone was accounted for. Turning to the business lesson from your actions, how important is it for someone or a leader never to abandon their charges, never to abandon those that count on you?
It's a fundamental responsibility. I mean, we weren't trained to do that. It was just obvious to me. As captain, I was responsible for everyone until they were finally all accounted for. And that took about 4 hours, ultimately.
Wow.
And I couldn't rest until that was done. And so I went through the cabin. After we had solved this problem we'd never specifically trained for and figured out a way to do it in 208 seconds, there was no way I was going to let anybody die for any other reason if I could possibly help it. So I went through the cabin twice to make sure that there was nobody left. And only then did we leave. It was just obvious. And I think not only was it a professional obligation, it was a human obligation.
Wow. On that note, Captain, you are the last one to leave the aircraft, but I understand that not before you grabbed the plane's maintenance logbook. Just curious, do you still have that logbook, or is it in the Carolinas Aviation Museum with the plane?
Sadly, neither. I'm grateful that the airplane is in the Carolinas Aviation Museum at the Charlotte Airport, and it's intact. The Smithsonian, I think, originally only wanted the cockpit section, a forward fuselage portion of it. But it between, I can't say enough good for the insurance company and for the airline and others. They probably gave up some proceeds that might have been gained from the salvage of it to donate it, to keep it intact, and let it be on view to the public as in a complete airplane. But the logbook isn't with it. I don't know if the airline has it or what happened to it. It would be nice to get it back. But it was just a final act to try to preserve whatever evidence the investigators might need. You see, 20-plus years before, as a pilots union volunteer, I had been an accident investigator on a couple of the accidents that had occurred in the early 90s. And I knew what their process was. I knew how important preserving the evidence was. And so I grabbed a logbook to bring with me.
Wow. Now, I know you've been to the museum. What emotions are evoked when you walk up to that aircraft?
Well, I think it was on one of the anniversaries when many of the passengers, who many of whom live in Charlotte, were there. And we went inside the airplane and sat in the seats that we occupied on that flight.
Wow.
So, as you can imagine, it was a very moving experience.
Mm. Now, millions of people have heard your words, either live on television, on radio, on the internet, in print, both in the news cycle and in your books. Everyone notes, and of course anyone listening to this show, now is touched by your humility. Where and how did you develop that excellence and character?
Well, I think I have my parents and grandparents to help share the credit in that. The Air Force Academy, the military tradition in my family, I think we're all parts of it. I think part of it is just that, unlike some who think that it's the Wild West out there and that we should just get whatever we can for ourselves, I think there really are things that we do each owe to one another. And I think it's these little gifts of civility that we give one another off and on, occasionally, just often enough, that allow civilization actually to function. And I think that it works best when we, temporarily at least, when we feel like we can do it, postpone our gratification for what might be described as the greater good, whether it's driving on the freeway or making choices in other areas of our lives.
Fascinating. We're speaking with Captain Sully Sullenberger, the pilot of the famous Miracle on the Hudson incident, right here on the Mind Your Business program with Yisroch Saftless on 77 WABC. If there's one person in America, in the world for that matter, who can shed light on how to deal and handle an impossible situation, it would be Captain Sully Sullenberger, and he's with us on 77 WABC. In the few more minutes that we have, first of all, the timing is great for this interview because Hollywood is buzzing the past few days. I understand that Tom Hanks is going to be playing you in the upcoming Warner Brothers film directed by Clint Eastwood.
You know, I'm happy that the film is in such great hands. It's an important story to tell, and I think it'll be well told. It's all good news. I look forward to seeing it on the big screen.
Mm, congratulations.
Thank you.
Turning to some recent news, all New Yorkers were overjoyed at the recent news that LaGuardia Airport will be completely rebuilt. Did you see the plans for the new airport?
I've seen some of the initial plans, not in great detail. I've seen some of the overviews.
Okay. Now, I do my fair share of travel, and often through LaGuardia, and we all know how tight and how short the runways are. A captain must touch down really early and brake really hard kind of to avoid the Grand Central Parkway, depending on which, you know, if you're coming over Westchester or Queens, etc. What's it like for a pilot landing at LaGuardia?
It's a challenge. You know, each airport is unique, has its own set of challenges, but LaGuardia being surrounded on three sides by water, with the runway 7,000 feet long, which is shorter than most major airline airports, means just what you said, that you must fly the approach very accurately, very well. You must touch down at the right point on the runway and not too far down. You must have the airplane flight path exactly aligned with the runway so that it remains within the confines. Laterally, you must stop within the confines. Longitudinally, you must touch down at the right attitude at the right speed to allow all of that to happen. And often, you know, there are winds that you have to contend with, sometimes low visibility, sometimes snow and other challenges, sometimes convective thunderstorms in the summer. So while I was glad to hear that there'll be some improvements made on the land side, the terminal side of the airport and the roadways and such, I wish that more improvements were being planned for the air side, the runway side of the airport. They really should be longer. They should have better safety areas than that are possible over the water ends of them. And it would be a lot better airport if they could be made longer and had better runway safety areas on the three runways that face the water. Now, one of them, runway 31, the run that goes from the southeast to the northwest, has already had some improvements made on the southeast end. But the ends on the northwest and the northeast side end over water, and they don't have those runway safety areas.
Yeah, as you can tell, I'm a little bit of a buff on this. And I've always known, and it's been documented, how even in an emergency landing, a 747 would not be able to come into LaGuardia. I mean, it would seem that with a proposed plan of investing $4 to $6 billion, that I would imagine the runway should be extended.
They certainly should. I'm sure it would be difficult and expensive, but there have been more difficult challenges taken up around the world. In fact, it's a sad commentary that many of the most advanced airports in the world are outside the United States. In fact, almost all of them.
On to another bit of news. Recently, you appeared on Face the Nation and discussed the disturbing trend how cheap, affordable technology, and of course we're referring to the drones, are so easily accessible and present such a serious danger to pilots and airplanes. My question to you, Captain, is, I don't think there's another pilot in the world that I can ask this to. Is the threat of a drone similar to the threat of a Canadian goose?
It is similar. Part of the problem is that we do not yet know how similar, because, to my knowledge, effective testing has not been done to determine how much damage one of these devices could do to an airplane. But we certainly know from over a century of history in aviation and from our recent experience with the Hudson River landing that birds weighing only 6 pounds or 8 pounds in great enough numbers can certainly bring down an airliner. We have had a number of fatal crashes over the years. An Eastern Airlines flight taking off from the Boston airport hit a flock of starlings and crashed in Boston Harbor with many fatalities. A large military jet taking off out of Anchorage, Alaska, a number of years ago hit birds. It was fatal to about 24 of the crew members on board, for example. And some of these UAVs, called drones, are very small and light, but they do have metal parts like batteries, like electric motors, and some of them are larger. In fact, these devices can be up to 55 pounds, I understand. And so we really need to find out how dangerous they are. But the real problem right now is that there is sort of a Wild West atmosphere in the operation of these devices, especially the ones that are basically for entertainment, not being professionally used in some fashion. People who are using them often are not pilots. They aren't trained to understand the risks of having them fly near airports or near airspace that airplanes use. There really are no effective ways to enforce the limits on how high they can go, how near airports they can operate, and we've seen some close calls. So the fact that they're so inexpensive and so easy to get makes them increasingly ubiquitous, which means that statistically we're increasing the chances of a collision with an airplane or a helicopter. These devices are easy enough to get and cheap enough that it allows a few people to do stupid, reckless, dangerous things. And I'm glad that the aviation and the legal authorities have recently increased the penalties for doing these things. The problem is the essential element that's missing is the certainty of prosecution if you do it. It's been so hard to find them, to identify and to apprehend the perpetrators in the act. So I'm increasingly concerned as the numbers increase, as these devices are used more and more, that we'll eventually have some bad outcomes. So we need to really work hard to figure out what we need to do about it before we open the floodgates anymore and these devices are even more prevalent.
Another threat to the flying public, of course, are these lasers. Irresponsible people thinking it's some kind of prank, they shine a laser into the cockpit of an airplane. How serious of a threat is that?
And again, it's potentially very serious. They get the stupid, reckless thing to do. And you have to realize that this intensely focused light has a very strong dazzle effect when it strikes someone's eye in the cockpit. It appears as if the light's coming from every direction, and it momentarily makes you unable to see, to function, to do your jobs. And we've been fortunate that so far it has not led to fatal crashes that I know of. But again, with the increasing numbers, if this continues, we are increasing the chance that there will be a really bad outcome from something like this. And it's been hard to find these people doing it, but there have been a few who have been found and have been prosecuted, and the penalties for doing so are severe.
Recently, wreckage has been found from MH370. Of course, that's the Malaysian flight that mysteriously disappeared. Do you ever think we'll find out what, we'll get down to the bottom of what happened there with that plane?
Well, every effort is being made to do just that. I'm hopeful that eventually we will find something, but we need to find more than one piece to determine what happened to that airplane, any more than we could determine why an entire house fell down by finding only one piece of wood. But the investigators may learn important clues from this when they and their experts have examined it closely, but we really need to find the majority of the wreckage of the airplane, and probably much as was done with the July 1996 crash off of Long Island of TWA Flight 800, that was caused by a fuel tank explosion. I've seen the reconstructed wreckage of this at the National Transportation Safety Board Training Center outside Washington. This airplane, the wreckage was brought up, much of it, by the Navy, and put together, and you can begin to see the patterns of failure where the metal was pushed out, and when it began to crack and tear, and where there's some scorch marks on the side of the fuselage. Yeah. And eventually they can work their magic and solve this detective story. But it's going to take a lot more effort and a lot more debris than just one piece to be able to do that. If they found the wreckage, they might also be able to find the cockpit voice recorder and the digital flight data recorder, which would also be important in determining what happened and how it happened. But we may never be completely satisfied unless we can also find out who did it and why. What steps were taken actively? What challenges were there? What actually caused this? And there's still so little known in this one of the greatest aviation mysteries in the world that it's pure speculation to go beyond the fact that they found one piece so far.
As we approach the close, I turn back to U.S. Airways Flight 1549. A few weeks after the crash, it was revealed that there was a book, I think, in the cockpit, Just Culture, Balancing Safety and Accountability, a book you had borrowed from a local library. When you called the library to notify them that the water-damaged book had been recovered, I understand they waived the usual late fees. Then New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg heard about this. I guess he checked his bank account, so he had a couple extra dollars and replace the book. Could you share with us a little bit about that incident?
Yeah, well, that's it. You've told the whole story. Well, almost the whole story. It's actually even worse than that. I was preparing myself to be a consultant when I eventually left the airline, in which I've done. And so I was reading things that were important to me and that interested me, including that book. But there were actually four books in my suitcase that day that remained in the airplane in the river until they were recovered and returned to us. And they were all interlibrary loans, and not just from my local library. They came from the University of California system. And so they were much more expensive had I ultimately been required to replace them as I expected to have to be. So that had a good outcome, too.
Earlier in the interview, I referred to, of course, your New York Times best-selling book, Highest Duty, My Search for What Really Matters, which is your memoir and a look back at the miraculous survival of 155 people aboard Flight 1549. You wrote a second book titled Making a Difference, Stories of Vision and Courage from America's Leaders. Can you share with us a little bit, some takeaway pointers from your second book?
You know, I already have. It's a story of people I admired from afar, but because of the opportunity since this flight, I've had a chance to know them and have extended conversations with them, you know, and people who have touched others' lives and made a real difference. And you'll be happy to know, I think, that when I chose these almost a dozen people to profile, I neither asked nor considered their political affiliation, but I chose people who had done the right things for the right reasons and who had exhibited moral courage. People like Admiral Thad Allen, the recently retired Coast Guard Commandant, Jack Bogle, the Vanguard Fund pioneer, Bill Bratton, now again the police commissioner, Lieutenant Colonel Tammy Duckworth, an Iraq War veteran helicopter pilot who lost both her legs and yet is a congressman now from Illinois, former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm, legendary NASA flight director Gene Kranz, who along with his team of mission controllers brought from around the moon the damaged Apollo 13 spacecraft. You know, one of the winningest baseball managers, Tony La Russa, who's actually a neighbor of mine, great guy. We spent a lot of time together talking about how similar, you know, leading a team to success is in flight as in baseball. Robert Reich, former Labor Secretary and now professor at UC Berkeley. And Jim Sinegal, the CEO emeritus of Costco, who's he's found a way to do well while doing good. So, I mean, just such a wealth of knowledge from all these stories, and we talk in depth about leadership, about, you know, building a team, about what kind of qualities you have to have. And really the answer that I came up with to all my essential questions like, are leaders born or made? Or does a leader have to have personal integrity or only professional integrity, or are they the same? Are all answered in this book for me and for the reader.
Fascinating. And, of course, the books are available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and at better bookstores throughout the world. Highly recommended. Kat, as we really approach the close here, how does it feel that 155 people are walking the face of the earth today because of you?
I can't imagine how awful it would be if even one of them had not. You see, my definition of success was absolute, was complete. And had it turned out otherwise, I don't know. I can't imagine how hard it would have been. But fortunately, that wasn't the case.
Mm. As we close out the interview, any final thoughts for our audience?
Just that it's great to talk to you. You know, these are obviously things that I've cared about and studied my entire life. It's fun to talk about them with you.
Thank you. Well, a very special thank you to Captain Sully Sullenberger, a true American hero, for sharing some really incredible advice and perspective right here on the Mind Your Business program on 77 WABC. Best of luck in all your endeavors.
Thank you.
Thank you, Captain.
Bye.
Well, Pesach, what did you think of that interview with Captain Sullenberger?
Really interesting. Totally different perspective from what we're used to having on the show, so it was refreshing.
Yes. Yes, we take pride in coming up with very, very fascinating and unique guests. I mean, coming from 2 weeks ago, Ira Zlotowicz, the president of Eastern Union Funding, of course, a whole perspective on the real estate world and banking and mortgages and commercial mortgages, etc. Last week, Matt Britton, the CEO of MRY, and his whole take on marketing to millennials. And this week, Captain Sullenberger. Now, Pesach, as the producer, first of all, a special thank you to you for making that happen. I mean, it's obviously a team effort, as the captain pointed out, and the members of our team at Bottom Line Marketing Group coming up with incredible ideas on who we should be interviewing, and then having the team in place to go ahead and execute. I mean, that's really our specialty, where we come up with creative campaigns and then follow it through to execution. And I'm so proud to say that's really what this show is all about. It's about from the creativity through the execution, which is, of course, what you're listening to. And, of course, this team to present such a great show includes the likes of George Flowers behind the board, who we would not be able to operate and sound good without him, and of course Jose Torres, and so many others that deserve our thanks and appreciation. If you want to connect with us, it's easy. It's actually through social media is the best way. You could connect with me on LinkedIn. You could follow me on Twitter. And you could like me on Facebook, Yitzchok Saftlis. And as I always like to point out, there is a dedicated website for this program called WABCBizRadio.com. And in case you're wondering, yes, that was built by our company website with brains.com. And that the website for this show, again, is WABCBizRadio.com. And one of the most incredible features about that website is the link to the podcast. The podcasts have been getting incredible amount of hits, many, many thousands. I didn't check the latest count before I came today, but it was well over 4,000, which is an astounding number. Of course, that means that you could multiply that number in terms of how many people are listening to the show. I mean, the power of 77 WABC is well known. But if you want to hear a podcast, and if in case you're just tuning into this show now, then you really missed an incredible treat. I mean, the fascinating interview, nearly a 40-minute interview with Captain Sullenberger, and we touched on such a wide variety of issues. For example, teamwork, leadership, and we actually turned to recent news, including the new LaGuardia, and the captain was pretty open that he felt it would be a mistake for the new LaGuardia not to add runway space. We spoke quite a bit about how short the runways are, 7,000 feet. And we discussed other issues regarding drones, how dangerous they are to aircraft. And we even asked him the question that we would not be able to ask any other, almost any other pilot in the world, and that is the threat of a drone similar to the threat of a Canadian goose? And he addressed it head on. We talked about the mysterious disappearance of the Malaysian flight MH370. We talked about the threat of lasers, those little laser pointers that can illuminate a cockpit in a very dangerous way that temporarily blinds a pilot. And he was very open about what should be done, and that it's a very terrible and criminal act, and that those perpetrators should be punished. There's just so much that was covered, and of course, how applicable his life lessons are to the business world, and the way he was so gracious in sharing it. And Pesach, actually, you're able to pick up his humility is so striking, mm-hmm, and it's mm-hmm, known mm-hmm. that anyone you talk to that you say, wow, we were going to have, you tell, we interviewed Captain Sullenberger. Of course, the first reaction is, oh my gosh, wow, the captain that landed the plane in the Hudson says, yes, it was him. And the way you hear him give share the praise with his team, with first mate Captain Jeffrey Skiles. Very, very touching to speak with someone and to get his life perspective. Really, really amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, we're just going to take a short commercial break, and then we'll be back with you here on the Mind Your Business program with Yitzchok Saftlis, right here on 77 WABC.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your services and programs. It has to deliver just the right message, the right way, to make customers excited about what you offer and interested in working with you. Online, you have to be on the money to make the money. So go with the best, Website with Brains. Their experienced team will plan, write, design, and program a winning website that combines simplicity and flexibility with powerful features that will make you the king of content marketers. And they make it so easy. All of their websites are made with an easy, user-friendly interface. Website with Brains will have your new website up and running within 4 to 6 weeks. Take control of your online marketing today. Call Website with Brains for a free consultation and see how they can improve your online presence. 1-800-WEB-9018. That's 1-800-WEB-9018. Or visit them online at websitewithbrains.com.
We're back here with the Mind Your Business program with Yitzchok Saftlis right here on 77 WABC. With Captain Sullenberger, he touched on a number of issues, experience, teamwork, and defined roles. And we know how critical that is in any business setting. And Pesach, if I may, perhaps we could even discuss that those points from the vantage point, the bottom line marketing group. We've been We've been in business since 92. And we bring the experience to the table, the teamwork to the table, and the defined roles, all three key points that the captain had referred to. And you talk about whether the campaign is a direct mail campaign, it's an online campaign, an overall strategic, comprehensive campaign, and all the pieces have to come together. There's an element of experience. Again, we've been around 23 years. Then there's the element of teamwork. We have really incredible stars in each individual seat, if you will. And the roles are defined. And it's very interesting the way the captain had referred to that. I mean, what I found among the many points that I was fascinated by Captain Sullenberger is, of course, the way he was so gracious and shared the limelight with Jeffrey Skiles, the first captain, the first officer. But the way that was fascinating, he mentioned that he only got to work with him 3 days prior. Can you imagine? To run, I mean, Pesach, I'm not sure if you heard the recordings from the control tower. I listened to it a number of times. It's fascinating the way he said he heard it 4 months later at, you know, down by NTSB. And he was moved to tears listening to it. And that the silence that was in that cockpit, yet at the same time, they just were communicating with each other like they've been working together for years. And it was that level of experience. So it's so fascinating in a marketing firm from our vantage point, where you have to have creativity and a spirit and zest, etc. And then there has to be that level of experience where you just kind of know what to do in any given situation. And thank God, actually, our team is blessed with a variety of many different ages, and we're proud to say that because we have the experience and the talent and the youth and kind of the perfect combination that's so necessary in any business environment. Any notes on that, Pesach? Or?
I mean, just echoing what the captain was saying about the teamwork and defined roles is really what we try to do to improve our efficiency at bottom line, where we all, when a project comes in, we automatically divvy up the responsibilities. And like he's saying, it's almost understood without even the communication. We all understand and know our roles to then execute seamlessly and deliver the best possible results to our clients. So what he stressed it and what he said was what saved those 155 passengers mm-hmm. on board mm-hmm. is so important, and we see it in practice in so many different areas.
Yeah, it's so true. Whether it's a political campaign, a nonprofit campaign, a corporate campaign, whichever one it is, obviously there always needs to be the instruction from the outset, the overview of the project. And then, like you say, once it gets assigned within the team, then everyone knows their roles and knows how to run with it. I mean, actually, a great example is really this show itself. When we were honored to be approached, and the whole relationship with 77 WABC, everything had to fall into place kind of quickly. The website, the ad campaign, the preparation that goes into each show is tremendous. Talk about the effort to land these type of guests, A-level guests that we're so proud of, and we put so much effort in order to land them on a weekly basis. And we, of course, see the results. The results is that we have incredible content for the listeners, and it could benefit. I mean, how many takeaways have there been so far through these shows? Pesach, I'm sorry to interject here. A fascinating takeaway is how some of the points that the captain was referring to were touched on by Dr. David Lieberman a number of weeks ago.
Do you recall that
interview, how he talked about leadership, he talked about teamwork and life experience. I mean, of course, hearing it from the captain is just was priceless. I mean, really, really incredible stuff. But as you see with many leaders, they actually think alike, which is why the captain's second book is a very, very fascinating read. His second book, which of course is out there in Barnes & Noble, Amazon, the title is Making a Difference, Stories of Vision and Courage from America's Leaders. And it's fascinating how he went and he listed the names of all the heroes that he interviewed. And, just really, really special to have interviewed someone like that and all our previous guests. Well, you're tuned to the Mind Your Business program here with Yitzhak Zaftlis. This is a program that airs every Sunday night from 11 to 12 right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and on WABCBizRadio.com. This show is about real ideas, real people, real businesses, real success stories on 77 WABC. It's about getting ahead in the business world, and we share lots of information, and especially from our wonderful guests that we have on a weekly basis. If anyone wants to know about how you market to millennials, well, go to the podcast on WABC Biz Radio and listen to the really incredible interview we had last week with Matt Britton, the CEO of MRY and the author of the book Youth Nation. If you want to know a thing or two about real estate and mortgages, listen to the podcast a number of weeks ago with Ira Zlotowicz, the founder of Eastern Union Funding. If you want to know a thing or two about leadership and teamwork, listen to our interview with Dr. David Lieberman. He wrote a New York Times bestselling book, Executive Power, and wrote many other books. And in fact, many of them were translated into a number of different languages. And going back further, there was a fantastic interview we had with Bill O'Reilly and Jessica Proud of the November team, which was focused on communication. There were so many takeaways from that interview that had to do with how to market your business, a large business, a small business, how to find your uniqueness, how to position yourself out there. All that is discussed. And going back to our very, very first interview that we had, the general manager of Uber here in New York, Josh Moore, and we had a chance to talk about technology. Pesach, I mean, let's go back to Uber. How many people still come over to us and refer to the Uber interview?
It's just amazing how that they're such an innovative company that whenever I'm talking, and I do talk to a lot of different potential guests who approach us, and we discuss, and Uber is like right away a light bulb because it just has that interest of everyone.
Now, how's it going to be when you tell people we had on Captain Sullenberger?
I anticipate the same.
Pretty incredible. Well, actually going to give a little bit of a teaser to our guest for next week's show. We're going to be interviewing Stephen Ulrich. He is a senior vice president of applications at GoDaddy. Also a fantastic vantage point. I mean, someone from GoDaddy, everyone knows GoDaddy, and of course they're much more than just their Super Bowl commercials. I'm not sure what percentage of the domain business they have, but certainly GoDaddy is wired into American fabric. So he's going to be our guest coming up on next week's show, so stay tuned for another great edition of Mind Your Business next week at 11 p.m. At this point, I'd actually like to give a shout-out to our colleague, Charlie Harari. He started his show just last night. It's called The Charlie Harari Show here on 77 WABC. I believe it aired at 9 o'clock Saturday nights from 9 to 10. Congratulations, Charlie. Great show, as always. I mean, you're a world talent, and it's great to be here together on 77 WABC. Well, as we approach the close of another wonderful show, a couple of pointers. Number one is, in order to connect with me, please just connect with me on LinkedIn, Yitzhak Zaftlis, Yitzchok. Follow me on Twitter and like me on Facebook. We'll actually put up photos. We always have some new photos that go up that have to do with the show. There's also, now, in case you're looking for photos of me with Captain Sullenberger, unfortunately, I do not have such a selfie because he was by phone, so I don't have that picture. But nonetheless, in case you missed it, please go to WABCBizRadio.com. It should be up sometime on Monday, and you'll be able to hear the entire interview with Captain Sully Sullenberger. Well, thank you again for tuning in to such a wonderful program here on 77 WABC, the Mind Your Business program with Yitzhak Zaftlis. Stay tuned until next week, where we will be back on at 11 p.m. on Sunday evening, the Mind Your Business program right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night from 11 until 12 for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he brings his business and marketing expertise to 77 WABC. Tune in to Mind Your Business every Sunday night from 11 until 12, right here on 77 WABC.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.